Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah, A-Dream, in the building, shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in, look,
yes, sir.
Look, we came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See, Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Metro. So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down in the mouth to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life. From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life.
Hey, coming to you live and streaming to all four points of the globe. It's your girl, Brooklyn born and Crown Heights raised. Living life and breathing life. It's Bree, baby.
Peace and blessings. You've reached the Bree Life Radio Show, and I'm your host, Bree. And tonight, we are going to be discussing child custody and child support issues. Is it a friend or a foe? Tonight, I'll be joined by Michael McCormick from he's the executive director of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children. And also joining us will be General Parker, who is the executive director of Illinois Fathers. Tonight, I'll be co-hosting the show with a very good friend of mine, and he's a very good friend of the Bree Life Radio Show, Alex Leith, and I believe he's on the line with us right now. Alex?
Yeah, babe, I'm here. What's up, Bree? What's up, Bree Life family? What's up?
Tonight, you know, we're talking about an issue that is it's an issue that's emotionally charged. It's not a white or black issue or African-American issue. It has no color definition. When you're talking about what happens in the lives of children and families, it's an emotionally charged subject. We both have family and friends and family members that have been exposed or have had to deal with this issue personally, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. How do you feel about the topic before we bring our guest on the line?
Well, it's definitely not a color issue, that's for sure. It's not black, it's not white, it's not blue, it's not gray, it's not whatever. It's almost more of a gender issue. And it's not as focused on the kids as it should be.
Absolutely.
Whether it's for the parents themselves who tend to use the children as pawns and victimize the children, or the legal system themselves that tend to not be as concerned with the children as they probably should be as well. So I just think the children really are the ones to suffer. I mean, we hear that all the time, but it just happens to be true. And I think it's going to be a great discussion. I have a lot to add to this discussion. You know, I consider myself to be a victim of child support and custody hearings myself, not being treated fairly and things of that nature. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, one thing I want to make clear, as you know, on the Bree Life Radio Show, we don't do any type of bashing. And I want to make it clear to the women, my women listeners, that I am not biased in this subject matter. I support families, and I think that's what we've gotten away from. As my co-host here, Alex, has clearly stated that it's almost a gender issue, and in some instances is very imbalanced. And that's what Michael McCormick and General Parker is going to be talking about tonight. So before I bring them on the line, it's just one other thing I want to say, and it has nothing to do with the subject matter we're talking about tonight. Over the weekend, I received a phone call from a very good friend of mine, and he was scheduled to take a position here in New York. He's moving from another state. Unfortunately, well, he's been out of work for 2 years. He just found a new job. It happens to be here in New York City, and he was supposed to stay with family members. And because he has financial challenges, he was unable to find housing on his own. And he was assured by the family members that he was going to be able to stay with them. Well, in the last minute, they reneged on him. And unfortunately, it'll be another week or two before he can move to New York and start the job. And in the meanwhile, he's homeless. It upset me a great deal. And he told me, and he's always listening to the show, and he's always a supporter of the show, and he told me that he's sleeping in his car. So the person, I'm not going to, you know, expose their name, but I just want you to know that I'm thinking about you. We here at the Bree Life Radio Show, we're thinking about you. We support you. And, you know, I've had conversations with you. If you ever want to take me up on my offer, you're more than willing, you're more than able to do that. So peace and blessings to you. Well, without further ado, we are going to bring our two guests on the line. That would be Michael McCormick and General Parker. Gentlemen, how are you this? Hello, Michael.
I'm doing well. I'm here. I'm doing well.
Great. Just for the audience, can you please introduce yourself and tell the listeners what you do at your organization, and then we'll turn it over to General.
Sure. My name is Mike McCormick, and I'm the executive director of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children. We're based in Washington, D.C., and the mission of our organization is to see that both parties who are involved in raising children or involved in divorce and unmarried parenting situations are able to stay fully engaged with their kids should they not find themselves not living together. So in the event of divorce or unmarried parentage, we work to see that kids have a full relationship with both of their parents.
That's great. That's really important. Full parentage. That's a term that we don't hear a lot, unfortunately. Let's turn it over to General. General, are you with us?
Hey, how you doing, Bree?
Hi, General. Please introduce yourself to the audience and tell the audience what you do at your organization and where you're located.
My name is General Parker, and I'm the executive director for Illinois Fathers, and we're located out of Mweeka, Illinois, which isn't too far from Springfield. And what we do is we try to educate legislators and the general public on the necessity of children having and needing both parents in their life. So.
Okay, gentlemen. I'm going to allow my co-host to start with a question, because when I came up with this subject matter for this particular show, just to introduce you, this is my friend Alex Leith. Can you introduce yourself to our panel, Alex, and tell them what you do?
Yes. Hi, General. Hey, Michael. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing all right,
good,
Alex.
Good. All right. My name is Alex Leith. I'm in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I'm a television writer, filmmaker, producer, and my company is called Link Court Productions. And I do a lot of work here locally in Virginia, in the film and television industry, and even outside of the area.
Hey, Alex, you wouldn't happen to know Jace Morton, would you?
Jace Morton, maybe by face, but not by name.
Oh, okay, because he's out of, the Maryland area there, right there by Virginia, so Upper Marlboro.
Oh, okay, no, I don't know him. But, yeah, that's basically what I do. So, but my first question to both you gentlemen, because both of you gentlemen, you guys deal with this daily. I have several questions throughout the evening, but I'll start with this one. There's a theory out there that some states are anti-dad states, and then some states are anti-mom states when it comes to child support and custody issues. What is the percentage, as you see it, of states that are anti-dad and anti-mom? To me, I think is resoundingly more anti-dad states, but what is it for you guys as you see it?
I think it's 100% to 0%.
Oh, really?
You know what? If there was a really great state for dads as far as custody goes, we'd probably advise people to move there if they thought they were going to be divorced. Alex, I say that somewhat tongue in cheek, but the fact of the matter is that across the country. In almost 90% of cases, mothers are awarded either primary custody of the children or primary residency of the children. And there are a couple of states that are moving in the right direction. And I would say, you know, Washington is one of those. Arizona is one of those. But Minnesota may well be one of those. Illinois is actually going to be taking some very positive steps in the not too distant future. But right now, Illinois is still really behind the curve on this. So, by and large, there really aren't any states that have just embraced the idea of parental equality when it comes to raising children.
Okay. And General, can you add any information with regards to Alex's question?
Well, here in Illinois, and I want to make it clear that we're the statewide affiliate for ACFC, American Coalition Fathers and Children also. So Mike can tell you what's going on a national level. I can tell you what's going on basically in Illinois and surrounding states. And
okay.
our percentage is about 85% mothers get awarded custody of children. Right now we're trying to get a bill passed through Springfield, and it's a parental visitation interference bill. And we've come up against a lot of opposition from people who seem to think that dads aren't that important. You know, more important that you pay child support, but the money is more important, and they're not really that concerned about the relationship between the child and the non-custodial parent. And I think that's crazy because we have plenty of research out there that shows that when a kid doesn't have that relationship with that missing parent, that they act out, and there's certain pathologies that come with that. That's like not achieving in school, joining gangs, becoming a juvenile delinquent, you know, becoming sexually active at an early age, becoming a parent.
Also,
themselves.
Becoming abusive with boys, becoming very abusive.
Right. Yeah.
Towards
all that,
women.
And not only that, the daughters become abusive too. Because I don't know if you know it, but you can look on YouTube and you see girls starting to act out now in violent manners, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And that all stems from not having that relationship with that other parent, and they act out, and domestic violence is a big issue and a big part of that later on in their life. But I don't think it's really like a state thing, Alex. I think it's more or less like a family court thing, you know, depending on what court you end up in and which judge you get, but it's really geared to helping moms out because generally dads used to be the breadwinner, okay, and they brought home the money. So if you got dad tied up in the system, okay, well, you know, they're protecting their profession because as long as you keep dad paying child support and paying court costs and court fees, you know, you don't have to worry about that. But a mom is divorced from dad and mom's on welfare now, you're not going to get a lot of money from her. But, you know, there's no money in the cure. There's only money in the treatment, see. And they want to keep treating the situation. So they don't care if they fix it. They don't want to fix families. They don't want to fix your kids. They don't want to fix you and your ex. They want to keep treating because that keeps the money full.
Okay.
Right.
Well, to close out that question, and I'll allow Alex to ask his question in a moment, but we have a person in the chat room And this person is stating that too many states use child support to balance their budgets. What would you say about that, Michael?
Here's what I would say about that is that what people don't seem to understand right now is that child support is a huge industry in the United States, and it is a taxpayer-funded industry. And right now, the child support bureaucracy employs over 56,000 people, and the taxpayers are spending almost $6 billion a year to underwrite this particular industry. And essentially, if you go back, you know, about 35, 40 years ago, there was no child support enforcement collection industry. And yet what we've seen is that now here we are 40 years down the road, and this industry is only collecting about 10% more money over what is owed on an annual basis than it was when there was no child support collection industry. And what we've seen is we've seen all of these citizens gathered into this particular industry. So there's no question about it. The way child support actually works is that the federal government, for every $3 that is spent on child support enforcement, two of those $3 come from the federal government and $1 comes from the state. So what's happening is that states have said, wow, this is a pretty good deal. If you're a bureaucrat working in the agency at the state level, you're going, gee.
Hello?
Hello?
Government on this program. Okay. And that looks like a pretty good deal if you're actually a state bureaucrat. But the upshot of that has been that no child support ever starts until a child is separated from one of their parents. So do we actually have a system in place now that's driving this separation of children and parents because it's such a great revenue generator for the states? And imagine, again, I mean, 56,000 people that are employed in this particular industry, and it's built on separating children from their parents. So I think that you know, while the individual in the chat room is talking about the child support issue, I think people really don't understand exactly how that child support system works. But I'll give you a real good example of this. And it's really, it's a broken system from top to bottom. At the low end of the system, if you can't pay child support, you're likely to find yourself in jail. And we got rid of, you know, we call that debtor's prison. If you can't afford to pay your bills, which child support is a bill, you know, we abandoned the practice of putting people in jail for non-payment of child support in the 1830s. But it came back in the 1990s and the 2000s through child support enforcement, where we regularly now are locking people up who are simply too poor to pay their obligation. And we're not supposed to be doing that. On the other side of the coin, for people who are paying in full, we have a situation in the state of Ohio right now where the state of Ohio has collected more than $200 million than what is actually owed in child support, and they were concealing from the people paying child support that they were overpaying. And why would they do that? Because they were getting millions of additional dollars in incentive and reimbursement payments from the federal government. So essentially what we've got is whether you're not paying, the system is going to make money off of you. And whether you are paying, you might find yourself that the system is overcharging you if you are paying. And I'm not talking about a few people that this happened to in Ohio. We're talking about over 114,000 people that the state was deliberately concealing from them that they were overpaying their child support. And these are folks that money was just being taken right out of their paycheck. And when they would go to the state's website to see how they were doing on their child support, the state was showing them, if they had overpaid, the state was showing them with a zero balance, over $200 million. So what we've got is we've got an integrity issue within that system, and we really need to be taking a close look at it. And yes, the states definitely bring in revenue for the state on their child support enforcement programs, no question about it.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I think that's a perfect segue to possibly one question that Alex might have for the panel. So, Alex, at this time, would you like to go to your next question?
Well, I think that the revenue for these states, as you stated, Michael, in child support court and also through traffic court, those are the biggest revenues state to state as we see it. But let me say this, because I'm in the midst of a situation myself, and I would do a review and adjustment of my support order since 2010, and they've been denying me my review and adjustment, and I've been being overcharged, okay? And they refuse to lower it. They refuse to bring me into court and say, I've had another child, I'm remarried. They refuse to bring me into court and say, listen, we know you're remarried, you have another child, your income may have decreased over the years or whatever the case may be. We have to review this case again and make the child support as so you can afford it. They refuse to do that, so it keeps piling up and piling up and piling up, and they refuse to do anything about it. So I'm being victimized by the system. Now, on the other end of it, my ex, she could care less because she see that as money in the bank. So as long as I keep owing, she figures she'll be okay. She's not going to say anything about it. She could care less because she's angry and vindictive about how things turned out. And this is what court is being used as. It's being used as a revenge platform for relationships, women, men who've been victimized in their relationships, bitter the way it ended. So they use the court system to get back at each other. Most of the time it's women. I'm just going to be clear about it. We're not bashing women on this show. But 9 times out of 10, it's a woman who's angry, who wants to use the children as pawns and do these different type of things. And even though the court knows this happens, they feed into it because they have a vested interest in it. So I guess the question would be, when we have a police department, what's the organization that polices the police? They monitor the police activities.
The internal affairs.
Right. You have internal affairs monitoring police. You have the Bar Association monitoring lawyers. You have the Hippocratic Oath that monitors the doctors and so forth. Who monitors these judges? How can you report a bogus judge and hope to get some kind of action against the judge? There's nobody watching or policing the judges. What do you say to that?
Right. Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think that the judicial review commissions, who are responsible for judicial discipline, are most often just panels that are populated by other judges. And, you know, the legal profession, I mean, citizens ought to be up in arms about this, because you're absolutely right that the court, the court provides tools to parents to beat each other over the head with all day long if the parents choose to do that. And there are so many better ways that we could handle divorce and child custody situations than we do right now. We actually take the worst possible approach to dealing with these issues, and that's what we do. We put basically what are essentially in most cases two decent people, and we bring them into a courtroom. We say, okay, slug it out to see who's going to remain the primary influence in the life of the child. And the only people that benefit by that are the people that are in the system and earning money off of family breakdown. We've got to take a look a little bit farther back in terms of what's going on here, because people need to understand that a lot of these problems come right out of your legislature as well. And I don't want to stray off of your question, Alex, about who's watching the judges. The answer, the simple and short answer to that question is, it is the judges who are watching the behavior of their colleagues on the bench. And you basically have to get very, very egregious behavior before you're going to see any kind of disciplinary action taken against a particular judge. And I have seen it happen, but again, of all the annual complaints a judicial conduct commission will receive, probably somewhere less than 2-3% actually result in any kind of disciplinary action against the judge.
Hey, Michael.
And the public is rarely ever informed of disciplinary actions that are taken. It's all handled very privately and very internally.
Well,
isn't that kid in the candy store policy? How are you going to have a kid in the candy store monitoring the candy store?
No, that's more like the fox watching the hen house there, Alex.
Right. Well, that's right. And that is one of the great issues here, is that, you know, there are all kinds of judicial reform organizations that are out there that are saying this makes no sense whatsoever. Where's the oversight? And where is the citizen oversight of what's going on in the judiciary today? And what you have is that the judiciary and the legal profession has really removed themselves from the lives of everyday citizens. They consider themselves to be overlords of the rest of us, not a part of our society, participating with everybody else. And you know, I could just relay to you horror story after horror story of what's happened when we have judges who are just, who, and particularly in this area, because of the best interest of the child standard, they basically have unbridled discretion to just determine and decide whatever they want in any particular given custody case. And, you know, even the American Bar Association has called this best interest of the child standard more of an aspiration than a standard, because it is so subjective, it is so vague, and it is so broad. It just gives judges the capacity to do whatever they want. Where the fact of the matter is that every parent has a liberty interest in maintaining a relationship with their child that is not supposed to be trampled on by the state unless a parent is somehow unfit to raise their child. And you never see in divorce cases where the courts are actually going, well, is this parent unfit? Because if they actually had to answer to what is the correct legal standard, they couldn't do anything but give children a full relationship with both parents. And as soon as that starts happening, what does that mean? That means there's a whole lot less need for family courts, for attorneys, and for the judges who run them. But right now, family court as it exists in this country today is big business. And that's what we have here, is we have people who are essentially profiting from the breakdown of families. And that's, we just feel like that's wrong. We know that what we're doing is not in the best interest of the kids, and we know what we need to do in order to. And I'm not, when I'm saying we, I'm not talking about just, you know, individual citizens. I'm talking about what the research tells us is actually the best thing that we can be doing for kids in these situations. And what we know is best for kids is exactly the opposite of what we're doing today. And citizens ought to be up in arms and saying to their legislators, no more of this. Do something to rein in these courts that are essentially destroying these relationships between parents and their children. Yeah, we didn't have this problem in this country 50 years ago.
I want to at this time give General an opportunity to rebut or add value to anything that has been said, or share a personal experience or anything regarding what's been said or what you notice happening directly in your organization with people who you are supporting in both issues related
to what I want to make clear to Alex is, and I hear the passion in his voice, and I hear the frustration at the same time. And trust me, I've been through it too, you know. But don't get dissuaded here, because even though mothers usually end up with custody, you know, and men usually end up paying child support, there are women out there who have to pay child support, and there are women out there who don't have custody of their children, okay? And I'm reminded by one of our members. She has multiple sclerosis. And at the time, she and her husband, I guess, they were still together, but she ended up getting sick and went into a coma. She came out of her coma. He had already taken off with the babysitter. He never thought she was going to wake up, see? And when she did wake up and she wanted to know where her kids were, well, he didn't want the kids being associated with it, so he filed an order of protection. So she hadn't seen her kids in about 7 or 8 years, just like I haven't seen my son. Okay,
wow.
And at the same time, when you have a son, or if you're going through it and you're not seeing your child and you don't want to have to pay child support, well, just remember, you know, whatever woman's in your life at that time, she's got to go through that too, because she's not seeing her stepson or stepdaughter, and your mom is not, they're not seeing their grandchild, your sisters, they're not seeing their niece or nephew. So,
there's,
you know,
an entire breakdown of the family unit.
Right. And see, and that's what they want us to do. They want us to make it a black-white issue, a male-female battle of the sexes. But what we have to do is stick together in this issue. Because as long as we fight each other, we'll never be able to get at them. It's a them-us situation. And the them is those who are in control, who hold the power, okay? And they're going to keep control of the power as best as they can. That's why they have the judges' commission that's run by other judges. So when you file your complaint, you know, it's going to be one of their cronies that's going to hear it, and it's not going to go anywhere, you know. But if you got an organization out there to back you up, and you got tons of people writing in or backing you on your complaint, then you get somewhere. I mean, think about the Trayvon Martin case. You know, we have young black men dying all over this country every day. It wasn't until Michael Bazin, wasn't until the NAACP and all these other organizations got involved, there was an issue. And I'm telling you, we got to treat each one of these cases like that because we're losing our kids in family court every day. And until we come together and stand up together and tell them, hey, we're not taking this no more. You know, you taking it, you're stealing our kids, you know. And I'm not just going to lay down for it. We're not going to lay down for it. So don't make it a male, female, or white-black issue. Make it a them-us issue.
Okay. Well, at this time, I want to go back to the chat room and read some of the comments, and then I want to give – I would like to infuse something that I know for a fact that has happened to a close friend of mine and get some thoughts about that. There is a person in our chat room that says, it is unfortunate that the way support is tied to custodial status and visitation time, that there is a monetary distinct something for states to support shared parenting. There are alternative ways to financially support a child in a recognized family that empowers both parents in the child's life. He or she also goes on to say it's a debtor's prison. Only recently did the U.S. Supreme Court rule that the court must determine if the obligator in arrears can pay before subjecting the person to jail. I just want to say I know a person, happens to be a woman, who had to fight twice in court for custody. The first time this woman fought in court, she fought hard and got shared custody. She got shared custody. She wasn't going to get shared custody. They were doing everything to tear this woman's life apart. They were trying to go back in her past, couldn't find anything. They assigned a forensic psychologist to the case to try to dissect her to see if she had any deviant behavior. Couldn't break her. This woman fought hard, and the only thing that they had against her was that she was disadvantaged and disenfranchised. She didn't have a job. But the father, he had a job that he was on. At that point, I think maybe it was 15 years, he was in the armed services like the National Guard or Reserves, and he went into court every time with his military uniform looking like G.I. Joe. And please, for the listeners that are veterans, I am not making a slur against what you do because what you've done for our country, what you're doing for our country is of a great service. I'm not saying that, and I'm sure that woman didn't feel that way. But he was using every tool and every dollar, that every resource that he had to try to defame this individual so that he did not have to wind up paying child support. So that was the first time they went to court. A few years later, where they was in a shared custody situation where the child was going between both parents every other week, and I would think that everyone on the line would support that shared custody is always the better solution, especially if you have two parents that are decent human beings. There's no reason why shared custody shouldn't be the first consideration in a court case. But a couple of years later, this person was dragged back into court. You know why? Because she had, for whatever reason, the father did not want at that time in his life, because he had a new family. He had a new woman in his life, and they had two children in the time period between the two cases. And he really didn't have as much time for this child because he was being pulled in another direction. So this woman wound up with full custody or physical custody of the child. She had a job, lost her job. She asked the father for a little bit of assistance. He wouldn't give it to her. He would talk to her in a very demeaning way and would tell her, well, revert back to our original custody arrangement. The arrangement says I don't have to give you child support. But that was only because they were in a shared custody agreement and it had never been modified. Thus, when she had to go to public assistance and ask for help, they said, well, if you apply for public assistance, we are going to have to go after the father for support. She didn't want to do that. She went back to the father and said, look, could you please just help me out? I just want $300 a month. He told her, you know what? So she went back to public assistance and said, I have to do what I have to do. What happened 3 months after that? 3 months after that, she was awarded, because this gentleman happened to earn about $150,000 a year in salary. She was only asking for $300 a month because where she lived, the cost of living was very nominal. What wound up happening is that she was awarded $2,100 a month in child support and $900 a month in arrears. What happened after that, and here's where we're talking about a parent utilizing the system as a tool. Now this father, who did not want full custody of the child, is all of a sudden taking the mother back to court to have the original custody order enforced so he can avoid child support. Now, Michael in general, and Alex too, what do you think about that? We'll start with General.
Start with me.
I think that,
first of all, you know, I love my son, and I love all my nieces and nephews, and, you know, I love kids that I help to raise and other relationships, and any opportunity that I get to spend time with them and see them, you know, I would jump at the chance, you know. I'm not like a lot of other guys, and I think that this guy was a fool, you know, not to want to spend time with his son, even though he did have a new family. But when y'all changed custody again and you had custody, physical custody of him for the majority of the time, you know, any decent person should have wanted to help give you more money, because it's going to take you more money to raise the kids since you got them more of the time. But if you had a 50-50 split, no money should have changed hands, I don't believe. But especially if y'all earning similar wages. But I think she does.
But if you
well.
Remember what I said, this woman was working and was laid off from her job. This is when the economy started turning back. So she went for months without going to the father to ask him for anything. But when things got a little tight, she had no choice.
Well, I think
she asked a man. She asked a man that was earning $150,000 a year just to give her $300 a month.
Yeah, I heard you the first time, and I'm saying that woman, I believe, is a very exceptional woman. He probably should have never let her go in the first place. But You know, if he's making that kind of money just to pay an extra $300 a month, you know, he should have jumped at that chance. Now he ended up having to pay 10 times that amount, you know. So I don't, like you said earlier, sometimes kids, I mean, they're used as pawns in this situation. And I think that's very sad.
Okay.
But again,
okay.
I believe that woman is a very exceptional woman, and she should have she should have stuck it to him in the beginning, you know. And
well,
a lot of women
tried
still don't get the chance
so
to do that.
This is
know,
a very good friend of mine, and she tried to avoid doing that because she's not a vindictive person, and she loves her son, and she saw no reason to try to hem him up to the ball, to the wall. But,
well, that's the
you
point
know,
I'm making it about her being exceptional. And take this for what it's worth. The first time I ever heard this phrase, I was watching Judge Judy. And I heard her tear into a woman one day, and she told this woman, she said, "No, I know exactly what's going on. That you hate your ex more than you love your child, okay? And you should have put your child's needs before your own selfish needs and your own hatred for your spouse or your ex, you know."
And that has become
that,
common.
You didn't even be here. Right.
That's common.
Alex, at this time, what would you like to say? And then we'll go to Michael.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, like I like to say, this is not a bashing forum, you know, for women against men. I said that before. I'm gonna say it again. I just stated that 9 times out of 10 is usually the man on the opposite side getting the bad end of the stick. But this happens to women too. So I want to put that out there. What I want to say is this. To the story that you just told, Bree, there should be some legislature in place, a law or something on the books, that if somebody is found to be manipulating, abusing the system for their own selfish deeds, just to get back at a former spouse or another parent, there should be some accountability, some punishment for that. A large fine, some prison time, the same prison time that the parent would get for not paying child support. Because these other parents are running around here unleashed, and they're using the system because the system tells them, yeah, come in and use us. Every time you come into court and say, I want to file charges, they oblige you for nonsense. All the time. It's just a paper piling up, papers of bureaucracy piling up and piling up. There should be some laws in place, some legislation in place to deter that, because these people are running rampant. I'm thinking
hey,
about
Before you comment, let me hear from Mike.
Well, I think that you know, Rita, you're going to have bad actors in many situations. Children, once they arrive, they need to be supported. They need to be supported by both parents. I think that in situations like this, one, it's great that there would be a shared parenting arrangement that's already in place. Alex would be pleased to know that actually a bill was sent to the governor that we've been working on for years in Arizona yesterday that would do exactly what he said, that if people were taking advantage of the system in a divorce and custody case, then the judges are required to actually sanction that individual for their bad behavior and can take any number of actions with respect to, for instance, I mean, we see it's common for false allegations of abuse to come in to be used to deny a parent a relationship with their kids, to complicate the litigation. But in the situation that you're talking about, you know, Bree, and what just transpired, you know, we have and the same thing with Alex here. What we have is parents are in fluid situations in terms of their own lives, and the court can be very rigid in terms of how it looks at these situations. And there needs to be right off the bat just an understanding that, you know, the mother's situation may change, the father's situation may change, and because of the fluidity in people's situations, it's going to be necessary to make different arrangements at different times during the course of the life of most children. And so, you know, so I just see it as being I think General was right on, you know, earlier in saying what we have to do is create an environment that there is an expectation that both parents will be spending a full quantity of time with the children and that both parents are going to be responsible for the costs associated with raising the child. And that at all times during the child's life, that's not necessarily going to mean equal financial responsibility, because you do have situations where one parent makes a modest income and the other parent makes a significant income. It doesn't necessarily mean that that in that situation the child should do without, but any parent who really loves their kid is going to do what they can to be able to meet those obligations with respect to their own children. And I don't think we're ever going to be able just to totally legislate away bad behavior, but I think we can create an environment where it is very much discouraged and where there are penalties for engaging in bad behavior. As far as the child support enforcement situation goes on and the individual fact pattern in the situation that you described, I could imagine that as soon as the fellow got hit with $2,100 a month child support award and $900 a month in arrears, that it probably didn't take but about 30 seconds to wake up and say, you know, boy, I wish I'd have just settled for the $300.
Let me just close that out with saying, from what my friend told me, when they were in court, it's my understanding when you file for public assistance that you don't even have to go to court. The Department of Social Services has a lawyer that represents you. She went to the courthouse to advocate on his behalf to have the monies reduced. And the lawyer looked at her like she was crazy. He said, first of all, this is his son. He's supposed to take care of his son. And from what I understand, you only asked him for $300 a month, and now he has to pay all this money. And the father was screaming at her in the hallway in front of the lawyer. And the lawyer said, look, if you would have went with her deal, none of us would be standing here right now.
Right.
That same day, he went from the third floor to the second floor in the courthouse and filed to petition her back in the court so that the original custody order that says that they both have shared custody had to be enforced. And what I want to know is, why is it that oftentimes when this happens to both the men who are the non-custodial parents or the women who are the non-custodial parents, do the judges not look at the paper trail and see really what's going on?
Because family court has become high volume processing. All right, judges will tell you that they have, you know, they're going to take 15 minutes to 30 minutes to make a decision that's going to affect kids for the rest of their life. And for instance, in the Chicago family courts, you just can't have, you know, it's high volume processing. And that's one of the great myths about family court today, is that everybody thinks that they're getting an individualized determination based on the facts and circumstances of their own case. Well, I can tell you that judges just don't have the time to get into people's individual cases and look at what's going on. I mean, they're dealing with the family courts deal with over a million custody cases in the context of divorce every year. They deal with a million children in the context of divorce and custody cases. They deal with another 1.4 million cases, new cases every year for children that are born out of wedlock. And then they deal with several million relitigation and modification cases every year. And what you're looking at is a system that has to be able to accommodate a high volume processing type of environment. The time just isn't there to go in and look at every individual case, which is why we actually have to set the system up itself in such a way that doesn't encourage ongoing conflict. on a constant basis. What it does, you know, it's an interesting situation. You know, how much of this could have been avoided? Let me ask you this question, Bree. How much of that situation could have been avoided if the social worker or the person from child support enforcement had been able to pick up the phone and call that other party and just say, hey, you know what, she's offering you 20, you know, she's offering to take $300 a month, but if you keep going down this route, you're going to end up at $2,100 a month and $900 in back support, you know, and $900 arrears obligation. So you're going to be paying $3,000 a month, and the choice is yours. Here's what you're looking into. But that never happened. That didn't happen in this case. If somebody from the courts could have picked up the phone and called that father and said, the choice is yours, pal. It's either going to be $3,000 a month or $300 a month. There's a hard way and an easy way to do this. Which one would you rather have? Then I think the guy would have probably taken the $300 a month.
Hmm.
Do you? Most people would.
Yeah, but that's
what
we're talking about. That's if we're talking about someone who's reasonable and rational. It's apparent that he wasn't working with rational thought processes because he just escalated it more. He thought he was thinking about himself, and ultimately he didn't think about what a second custody case was going to do to his child.
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier, Bree, when, you know, he was just so hell-bent on not helping you out at all, you know.
Well, no, this is not me.
I'm talking about the girl in the case when I say you, you know.
Right.
That he's so hell-bent on not helping his ex out, you know, because he's mm-hmm. just hating her more than he loved his son. Because anybody, you know, in their right mind, like I said earlier, if you loved your kid more than you hated your ex, you would have been thinking, say, hey, you know, I really don't want to help her out, but this is helping my child, you know, and I love my child more than I have harsh feelings towards this person, this individual, so I'm going to do what it takes to help my child out. But see, when you come to family court, that opens up a whole plethora of different issues. You got to deal with domestic violence, false allegations of domestic violence, visitation mm-hmm. interference, you know. I mean, all these things that come about, and they help to make those pathologies that I was talking about earlier that the kids have to deal with. And like Mike said earlier, you know, you got a stranger who's going to look at your case for 10 or 15 minutes, okay, and is going to make a decision that's going to affect your child for the rest of his life.
Right.
Not custodial parent till that child turns 18 or graduates from college, you know. And the custodial parent, I mean, they all got to deal with this stranger's decision, and they're going to dictate to them how they're going to live for the next 10, 15 years, you know, and it just don't make any sense. But what I wanted to say to Alex earlier is, you know, when he was talking about there should be some laws on the books, there are laws on the books for those kind of things, making false allegations, just like in that lady's case, you know, if somebody used the system and said, well, I want to have shared parenting because they're trying to get out of paying child support, then you find out that they're not even keeping the kid. To me, that's another false allegation, you know. So, but there are laws on the books. Our problem is having these laws enforced. You know, visitation interference. We're trying to get a bill passed now. Like I said earlier, it's called the Watkins Bill. This bill was based on a young man who had to go through the system before, and they profiled his story on Dateline about a year and a half ago. Might have been 2 years ago now. But this guy went over there after being accused of domestic violence or he was accused of doing things to his daughter and all that. And when the court found out it wasn't true, they awarded him visitation, you know, with his daughter. But this family was so hell-bent on not letting him see his daughter. When he came to pick her up for visitation, they shot him in the back of the head and killed him. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Now, there's supposed to have been a law on the book where it was a law on the book, but it was kind of weak, you know. But they still wouldn't even enforce that law, you know. And that's when our group got involved, and that's why we came up with this new bill that we're getting passed now, you know. But even though this bill gets passed, that still don't mean that the judge is going to enforce it. when you show up at the house, the police may not enforce the order. They say, well, you know, that's a civil matter. You got to go back to court. That's why we're trying to get instituted right now and create an office of visitation interference enforcement, just like they got child support enforcement, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about the judge and all them taking care of the child support enforcement. There's an agency to make sure that you pay. There's an agency to make sure suspend your driver's license or your professional license if you get behind, you know. They'll come and put you in jail and do all kind of things, you know. And you don't even have to worry about a lawyer, none of that other stuff. They got fill-in-the-blank forms. You can get that instituted and start it all on your own. We want to do the same thing on the other side because we want the courts, we want the legislators and all of them to know that, you know, a child's emotional well-being is just as important as their physical well-being. So that means I can pay money and make sure they're taken care of, but I want to make sure that their emotional needs are met also. So we got to keep that relationship with their child and that other parent intact. And it's a plus for society. It's a plus for the kids, and it's a plus for society.
Exactly. Well, we're like 5 minutes from the top of the hour. So what we're going to do now, I'm going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to have more questions, and we're going to start taking calls. So for the callers, for the listeners, please, we want to hear from you. The call-in number is 424-220-1862. That number, again, is 424-220-1862. And, you know, you can follow us at Bree Life Radio at Facebook, Bree Life Radio at Twitter. So we're going to take a commercial right now, and we'll be back in five.
Bree Life Radio is a grassroots radio show offering a voice to everyday people. It is without a doubt that this service is a pleasure for we at Bree Life to provide. However, this service comes at a cost. For us to continue to provide this valuable outlet to the community, we need your support. Join us as we raise funds to keep Bree Life Radio streaming while we provide assistance to Public School 161 in Brooklyn, New York. 15% of all funds raised will go towards providing school supplies to the students of this necessary and vital educational institution. You can find more information about our fundraiser on the web at BreeLife.evenbright.com. That's BRIELIFE.EVENBRITE.com. In 1 second
of 1 minute,
it only takes
one word,
one gesture, one story, one idea, one hug, one kiss, one smile, one hand, one look, one touch. One dream.
Everybody got a dream.
One gift. And one person to do one of these things to make one difference. Oh, yeah. Before I go.
One thought.
One thought.
One thought.
Will you be the one to do at least one of these things? Today's segment has been brought to you by the number.
One.
It's been Mark Said It in under
1 minute.
It's the Bree Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
When Bree Life's up.
You gotta turn it on.
It's the Bree Life Show.
You gotta turn it on. The Bree Life. The Bree Life. You gotta turn it on.
It's the Bree Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
When Bree Life's up.
You gotta turn it on.
It's the Bree Life Show.
You gotta turn it on. The Bree Life. The Bree Life. You gotta turn her on.
Tune in Wednesday and Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for real talk about real life. Inhale and breathe light. It's the Bree Life Radio Show on blogtalkradio.com/BRIELIFE.
It's the Bree Life Show.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
It's the Bree Life.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
With the Bree Life.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Cause it's the Bree Life.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
With the Bree Life.
Welcome back, welcome back.
Breathe light. Welcome back to the Bree Life.
Well, welcome back. You're back at the Bree Life Radio Show, and tonight we're talking about child custody and child support issues. Is it friend or foe? And tonight I'm co-hosting the show with my very good friend Alex Leith, And we're being joined tonight with Michael McCormick. He's the executive director of the American Coalition for Family for Fathers and Families, or Children. I'm sorry. Why am I so tongue-tied? And also tonight we're being joined with General Parker from Illinois Fathers. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Welcome.
Thank you. All right, we're back.
Well, to move forward from where we left off before our commercial break, Alex, did you have any more questions for our panelists? At the second half of the show, we're going to begin taking calls, but I want to get some questions out to both Michael and General to finish up our segment, and then we'll take callers.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say that I'm glad to hear that there are some bills to this abuse of the system that are going to the proper authorities for review. There are also some bills, as General said, that are in place that are not being enforced, and we got to focus on getting those things enforced. What I do want to say in regard to another situation that happens to me, because I've been going through this for a little while now, is that in New York, a few years ago in New York City, there was a young lady. I'm from New York. There was a young lady. Her name was Nix Mari Brown, and she was about 6 or 7 years old. And ACS was always going to her house. The Administration of Children's Services was always going to her house to see if she's being abused or not. And they would always leave and wouldn't take the child with them and so forth. They would get called back there. They would go back again to see if the child was being abused, and they wouldn't take the child out of the home. So eventually, unfortunately, the child was killed in the home. There was a lot of backlash on ACS behind this incident, and heads began to roll. A lot of people were fired. They were let go. And they revamped the whole ACS system behind this case. But what they really were doing, not just revamping the system, but they were dead set against something like this ever happening again on their watch. So they didn't care if they destroyed families or what, but another child wouldn't die on their watch. Now, on the surface, that seems commendable. You know, we want to make sure children don't die or whatever. But the underlying factor is they're not looking at the evidence as it's put before them. They're just intent on destroying families and pulling children out of homes to cover their own behind. I say all that to say this. I had a situation where I had custody of my children back in New York, okay? Their mother didn't like that, okay? She was running around with her boyfriend or whatever, and she didn't like the fact that I had the children, okay? She didn't want to be in the household with us. She wanted to run around with her boyfriend, and that was fine. I took care of the children. I didn't worry about that. I went to work. They went to school. We were okay, okay? But come to find out what she was doing was, when she wasn't in our presence, she was down at the child support office filing a claim for child support for two children she didn't have. She would tell ACS that when I was at work that I actually abandoned the children and left them home alone. Now, my daughter was 15 at the time. My son was 8. What parent doesn't tell a 15-year-old, listen, do your homework, make sure your brother's okay, you'll eat your dinner, I'll be in soon. That's been going on in households forever. That's not neglect or abandonment. That's a father that's at work. Take care of business to my 15-year-old till I get in. But she used it as an opportunity to try to gain custody of the children to get child support for her own selfish, angry, and bitter desires. So there has to be something done to people in these instances, other than just saying, oh, well, he didn't do it, that's fine. We found out he didn't do it, that's good. Because now your name is mud. You've been tossed through the mud back and forth. And all they get is a slap on the wrist. Well, we found out he didn't do it, that's fine. But the person who accused you knew from jump you never did it. And they said it anyway.
Okay,
so
Alex,
has to be done
tell me what
people.
The question is, though, because I want to start taking calls.
Okay. The question is, and I know Brother Jim was like, I hear his passion.
You could sense it right, he's bubbling.
Yeah. The question is, are other states, I guess this is more for Michael because Brother General is in Illinois, are other states going to follow the model in which the bill that you put forth? Do you see that happening?
I think that there is a trend line in custody cases to discourage the kind of activity where people are bringing false allegations to gain advantage in custody situations. I think that the Child Protective Services organizations around the country are in hot water over a lot of issues. Some of them being, you know, too quick to remove children from homes. We live in a society of 300 million people now. We're not going to catch every problem before it actually ends up in a tragedy. We just can't do it with that many people in the country. But what we can do is we can make sure that we are not, you know, going overboard in these particular types of situations. And I hear all the time from people who are just in your situation, they're accused, the other party is using the system to make their life difficult, and before they can even get to the substance of the issue, they have to actually get past all of this nonsense. And I do think that the trend line, particularly in cases where it's divorce and child custody are involved, the trend line is that we have to pay, we have to really examine these claims to see if somebody is attempting to manipulate the system in order to gain an advantage. And there has been an awful lot of commentary written from people who are practicing. It makes the judge's jobs harder. It makes the attorney's job harder if they have to defend against falsehoods before they can ever get to the substance of the issue. And I do think that what we're seeing is that there's a greater trend to actually holding people accountable for that. In the meantime, that doesn't do anything for you if you're the one who happens to be caught up in it at the moment. And I do think that, on the one hand, I'm glad to see that's being taken more seriously, that it's not just being accepted just because, you know, the hardest things in the world to deal with are the he said, she said situations. And we're moving to a point where people are going to have to provide evidence. They're not just going to be able to accuse and then walk away with everything based on a false accusation. But what you're pointing out is just tremendously problematic within these systems. And I think it's important for people to understand that as soon as they turn to the courts for a resolution of their problems, they have lost the ability to deal with them on their own. And I think people ought to be just very, very concerned about allowing strangers or bringing strangers in to make determinations about what's best for your particular family. That is a slippery slope that oftentimes just doesn't lead to very good outcomes. So, I'm sorry to hear about what's happening. It is very common. But I think that the system is actually recognizing these problems, although we've got to understand, too, that there's a lot of money that flows around the CPS organizations. There's a lot of money that flows around child removal. There's a lot of money that flows around parental right terminations and adopting children out. That is just another topic completely. And I see this all the time. But we just don't have enough time right now to deal with that issue, that issue on this program as well. It's a problem. All of these systems of government that are involved in family life need continual oversight, and they need to be revamped to make sure that they actually do the least amount of harm to parents and to children's relationships with their parents.
Well, Michael and General, if you remember in our conversation yesterday, this was the very topic that I was bringing up and feeling quite passionate about, because I know that there needs to be some intervention done to kind of sway both parents from really allowing, like you said, to for people who don't know you to now begin to make decisions that are going to affect a certain amount of time in your lifetime and, more importantly, in your child's lifetime. Do you know of any – I know there's an organization named CASA, but other than CASA, do you know of any other type of mediating organizations that specialize in the family court process and also the custody and, more specifically, the custody and support issues? Because with friends of mine, with people who I just happen to meet, and we get into discussions about custody and support, I always advocate for mediation, because I know once you give up the power and you ask individuals such as a law guardian, who can be a nightmare in a custody case, and lawyers who are just bilking you for $250 an hour on either side, and then you have a judge that, you know, looks like a deer in the headlights. These people don't know you. Wouldn't you say, both General and Michael, that mediation should always be the first consideration?
Well, Bree, I think the first consideration would be for parents to cool down and talk to each other with calm heads and try to come to an agreement on their own. The mm-hmm. problem I have with mediation is it depends on the organization and the people who are doing the mediating, because, you know, going back to what Alice was talking about, the problem is that they incentivize bad behavior to all these different organizations with CPS, your exes, or whoever. I mean, do you know that you can make a false accusation of domestic abuse and nothing can be done to you? They can't even come after you for filing a false accusation of abuse.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and that incentivizes the other party, you know, to make these things, because, you know, they come out the winner in the custody battle. You got state attorneys who have a no-drop policy because there's money that's given to their office, you know, and the police department and judges for training. You know, they get incentivized to make these accusations, you know, and put these reports out there of domestic abuse, whether it's false or not. They could care less, you know. All they know is they get money for this. You know, CPS, you know, they get money for all the kids that they get to see. You know, CASA, I heard you bring up CASA again, like, yesterday, and CASA gets involved when there's supposed to be domestic abuse charged in that situation where the kids are concerned. You know, but I was supposed to be a trainer, one of the investigators for CASA, and they kicked me off the team because when I was going through the training, they was giving bad advice because they were being trained by the Center for the Prevention of Abuse, and they were coming in saying, well, you know, is dad this and is dad that, and listen to this tape. I said, wait a minute, that's not what I heard, you know. And they were giving erroneous information. I said, no, the statistics that I have don't say that, you know. And when I started to challenge them, I said, well, I tell you what, you bring your research and I bring mine. And they couldn't bring their research, so they said, well, you just won't fit in with the program, you know. I had a guy, a friend of mine, he worked for the DCFS. And he came to me, he told me that he got fired because, you know, he knew some kids who came through there. He grew up in the projects that we all grew up in, and he knew the kids, and he knew their parents and their dad. And they were going to turn their kids out to some strangers in a foster family, and he told them, he said, wait a minute, you ain't even tried to find these kids' dad because I know him, and I know exactly where he stays, you know. And they couldn't have that, you know, because they're so hell-bent on breaking up the family and saying dad wasn't around, because there ain't no money in the cure. It's only money in the treatment, see. So as long as you have a system that keeps incentivizing bad behavior and getting the numbers and getting the reports and all that, instead of a case where they can keep families together and show how they help the children instead of saying, well, we got these many cases coming in, you know, and that's what we got to deal with, they're going to keep on trying to increase the numbers because it's job security. They protect their profession. So.
Okay. Well, at this time, I want to take our first caller. That caller is from the 630 area code. 630, we're bringing you on the line.
Hi, my name
is... I'm sorry. Welcome to Bree Life Radio.
Hi, my name is Dave. I'm from Illinois. And I just
Hi,
wanna,
Dave.
I want to commend General. I've known General throughout my involvement with Illinois Fathers as well. I am totally just disgusted. I've been through the appellate court, the Illinois Supreme Court. I've been through DHS. I put the director of DHS, Julie Hamas, and the director of child support, Pam Lowry, on a supervisory motion to compel them to do their jobs. And then they completely, I got a personal letter from our director of child support enforcement, Pam Lowry, stating that she has nothing to do with trying to either help facilitate to get it to an administrative judge. Post-decree in Illinois, we have a statute in the administrative code that states that anything after the divorce is post-decree is supposed to go to child support enforcement courts. What they do is they repay money back. Well, Chief Judge Evans gets, on average, probably $26 million a year for child support enforcement to have it reheard back in the courts. On the 19th of April, my judge completely wiped from the call my child support reduction, and now I'm going to take them to federal court. The director of child support enforcement, Pam Lowry, completely said that I had to bring it back to the circus court in Crook County, and I did that, and they wiped it from the call. And, you know, the bottom line with all this stuff, I've done so much investigation on this Title IV-D money. It's ridiculous how much incentives they get per our dollars for the non-custodial to pay in. They don't want you to pay in. What they want is they want you to have a racket of to go in the rears, because they get more money from when you're in the rears than they do for when you pay. I'm totally disgusted with all this stuff. And, you know, I got a whole bunch of information that I'm going to send you. This is just, I don't know what to say.
I would like to receive that information also, and you can do so by sending the information to BriLifeRadio@gmail.com. That's B-R-I, Life, L-I-F-E, Radio, at gmail.com. And I'd certainly like to review it.
And like you talked about CASA, that agency is funded through the Title IV-D funds. So if they don't keep conflict going, they're not going to get any more money. And most of this stuff is so driven by the Title IV-D money. I mean, what did DHS or HHS get for till 2016? They got $1 trillion funding. Illinois gets $529 billion a year. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Dave, what I want you to do you have a question for either Michael McCormick or General Parker at this time?
Or
are you just sharing information with us, which we appreciate, because you sound like you have a whole lot.
I wrote, actually, anybody wanted to look on the internet, I wrote, I went through all the statutes in Illinois and the administrative code in Illinois for child support enforcement. I wrote Divorce Big Book, and I distributed to the governor, the lieutenant governor, the IG, the AG, the DHS, and all the agencies. They're not following it. And the biggest contender of all this stuff is the Illinois Supreme Court. They hold the keys to all this, and they're not doing their jobs. So, and I just want to tell these other two gentlemen, you guys are doing a great job, and I'm going to keep fighting, because if I don't fight for my rights, my kids have none at all. And I'm fighting for all the kids. So keep doing a great job. And I'll
Thank
send you
so much.
A ton of
Thank you so much, Dave, for calling in. Don't hang up. stay on the line. We'll keep you on the line, and good luck with your efforts.
Oh, no worries.
Thank you.
Well, gentlemen, just briefly so that we can take on another caller, what does anyone on the panel, both Michael or General or Alex, what could you say about what this gentleman presented to the panel tonight?
Well, he's lived the reality of the family courts, and he's articulating what we've been talking about in the terms of the corrupting influence of taxpayer money as it gets mixed up in personal family relationship issues. What's happened here is that our governments have figured out how to generate and how to disperse income off of family breakdown. And what's been created is a system that is drawing in millions upon millions upon millions of Americans and saying, we are going to now control the most intimate details of your life. And those intimate details being your relationship, regulating your relationship with your family members. And in the process, we're going to require you to pay money to essentially be able to keep any kind of relationship or not keep a relationship with your own flesh and blood. These agencies, this government, has totally overstepped its authority when it comes to the families of America. You have a right of association that is a First Amendment right, just like your right of free speech, just like your religious freedom rights, just like free press rights. You have a right of association in this country with anybody that you desire to associate with. And amongst that right of association, first and foremost, is your right to associate with your family members when, where, and how you see fit. And if you're not a danger to your other family members, the state is obliged to keep its hands off of your relationships. Yet in family court, every day, parents are having their relationships with their children destroyed by these family courts and children's relationship with their parents destroyed so that the states can turn a buck. This is what's wrong with this system. And I thank and appreciate Dave for what he's doing. And every parent out there who's had their relationship with their child reconfigured by the family court against their will ought to be making family court and family law reform their social justice issue. There's no question about it. It is the most serious problem that's facing America today. Over the last 40 years, the family courts in this country have torn the social fabric of America to shreds. We have nearly a third of the children in this country that grow up without any significant relationship with one of their parents. And it's not because the kids don't want to know their parents, and it's not because the parents don't want a relationship with their children. It's because the jackasses of the courts and the government have found a way to destroy families and make a buck at it in the process. And forgive me for being so blunt about it, but people
absolutely
should be up.
We're blunt on the Green Life Show, so you're at home.
Well, I'm telling you that people should be up in arms and should say no. You know, I was with General. General did this wonderful thing in Peoria a year and a half ago with Michelle Alexander, who wrote the book The New Jim Crow. And the audience at the hotel that night, there were 250, 300 people, predominantly African-American, and then, you know, good old Caucasian Mike McCormick there. And General was kind enough to ask me to participate. And I will never forget that the question that came up. I mean, you know, I love African-American folks. I just love people in general. But it's the question that I'll never forget that came up, and General, you may recall this, was a woman stood up and said, how do we keep the government, and she was talking about CPS, Alex, how do we keep the government from taking our children? And I'm telling you that the government has no right to take your children unless you are demonstrated to pose the risk of imminent and substantial harm to your child. They have no authority to be in your life. and they are completely overstepping their bounds. And what you're seeing in America today is the government's plan for raising families. And this is no different. Let me just give you an idea of this. You know, everybody's heard of Socrates, and people have this real high opinion of Socrates. But let me tell you what Socrates, the Greek philosopher, thought about families back in 430 B.C. What he envisioned for the family was that children, when a child was born, it would be taken from its mother, it would never know its father, and it would be raised in a communal environment with nursemaids and other people who were of no blood relationship to that child. And the idea, what he envisioned, was a society where we created children who were perfectly suited to meet the needs of the state and to serve the goals and desires of the state. And what I'm telling you today is that the way that government is managing family life in America, that we are not too far off from what Socrates envisioned 2,500 years ago for society. But I don't want my children being raised to be the servants of the state.
No.
I want them to be raised to be human beings, to be able to experience the fullness of life as it was intended for them, not that they are going to be slaves to a government. And yet government has taken over every aspect of the private sphere of family life in this country today, and it is absolutely wrong, it is absolutely illegal, and if we as parents don't push back, you know, the America that I knew as a kid is disappearing, and it's disappearing very quickly. And it's not, we are not improving as a society. We are actually, how many people live today? Well, in the African American community, what we know of young girls in the African American community is they say, well, we believe in marriage and we would like to be married, but we don't ever think that we will be married. 50 years ago, everybody in this country thought they would get married, African American and Caucasian kids, and everybody in between. Where have we gone and what's happened in the last 50 years where we have a whole segment of society that says, I'd like to be married, but I don't think it will ever happen for me? I'll tell you what happened. Government got in the middle of family life, and it's been an utter disaster. You know, the projects in the south side of Chicago 40 years ago used to be full of families. Now they're just full of single mothers. And so anyway, hey, you don't get me started on this. You know, we could go.
Oh, no. Well, you know what? I'm going to ask you to harness that for a moment because we're going to take another caller, and that caller is from 347 area code, and then the next caller we'll be taking is from 706. But the next caller we'll take is from 347. Hello.
This is Ricky Lee. How you doing, Bree?
Hi, how are you?
Ricky Lee. This is Alex's brother.
Oh, hi. How are you?
How you doing? How you been? I ain't seen you
haven't
in so
seen
long.
You in a long time, but thank you so much for calling into the show.
I'm glad. I'm
do you
glad
have a question,
doing well.
Panel?
No, I don't have a question. I just want to, you know, get some things off of my chest, basically, because I went through this system. And
okay,
I can
and I'm
going
to
right
ask you to, I'm going to ask you to do that
be
in
short.
I'm going to ask you to be short. If you could wrap it up in 60 seconds, that would be great.
Wow. No, I can't wrap it up in 60 seconds, but I can tell you this. There is no...
Okay. Well,
There's no revamping this system. This system is so severely broken that it is no repairing it. You have to tear it down and rebuild, period. I've been through this system. It is a joke. I'm listening to what you say. I mean, everything y'all saying is right on point. And there's so many different aspects of this thing that there is no way of fixing this thing. People are out to make money because of the greed, the selfishness. This is what's tearing this system down. I had my ex-wife. I was paying child support. Now, they had me paying child support. I had to go. They had me out of my house and all kind of stuff for years. I ain't going to go into what I was accused of and all kind of nonsense, but I was out of my house for 2 years, and I had to pay child support, pay the rent, and all kind of other stuff. At the end of the day, all I had was enough money to go get a pair of rubber gloves and dig around the garbage for something to eat. This is how they treat you, okay? So ain't no fixing this system. I'm going to call in because I know you got to have like a part 250 in this to get everything out.
So wait,
I
think we're going to have a three-part series on this, but... You know, I'm so happy to hear your voice. You sound like Alex's twin, but I know you're not, because I know you since I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
And it's to hear your voice, but it's also sad to hear what you've been put through as a part of the system. So.
Yeah. You know, there was a time when you were innocent until proven guilty. Now you're guilty until proven innocent. If a woman call the cops and say, he hit me, they don't come in and ask questions no more. They come and they take you out. They taking you out your household. They're pigeonholing you as far as your kid. Let's say you have one bad kid. You have one bad kid that's messing up. And something happened with that kid. You spanked that kid or something, and that kid go to school and say, my father spanked me or beat me. They come and they take all your children out the house. They don't take the bad kid. They take all your kids out the house. So you are literally just subjected to whatever they want to do to you. This is the problem. I said, yo, we got to do something. But I know ain't no revamping no system. Tear this bad boy down. Burn it down and rebuild it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Don't hang up. Stay on the line. We'll stay on the line. And I'm going to turn that one over. I'm not going to invoke nepotism tonight, so I'm going to turn that over to General. Briefly, do you have any comment as to what Alex's brother shared with us this evening?
Yeah, what he's talking about, like I said, he brought up a lot of things that we spoke about earlier, but what he went through, I basically went through the same thing and a lot of other guys, and it's the Violence Against Women's Act, you know, which sounds good on its face, but really it has a lot of... problems with it, the way that it's written, and it violates your civil rights. They're talking about it in Congress right now. They had the big old thing. All Republicans hate women. It's war on women. They won't reauthorize it. Well, they didn't reauthorize it because we've been there lobbying because there's some problems with flour. You know, that needs to be fixed. So they politicized it. Just like with our children, they've been over-politicized and they've been overly monetized, okay? And they want to make money off of it and they want their political points, you know, is the big party thing right now. So I hope they get it right on the House side. So the Senate just gave up and said, okay, we'll go ahead on and pass it. We don't hate women. We don't want to be accused of hating women. All we want to do is just get it right, you know. So they wanted to make it more fair and they didn't want to violate people's civil rights. And that's exactly what happened to Alex's brother. His civil rights were violated, you know. So they just go in your house, they kick you out, you don't have any say-so. You know, normally, you know, you have the right to face your accuser. They ain't supposed to take you your property or seize your property or your liberty or anything without you going to court first, but they can do this ex parte. I mean, there's a lot of problems with it, and the biggest problem is that it affects the African-American community disproportionately. You know, it affects the white community, but I say this all the time whenever I go anywhere to speak, you know, if white America catches a cold, black America gets pneumonia, okay? So,
we're going to wrap up that portion of the, again, I want to say thank you so much to Alex's brother for calling in and posing that important question and also sharing an unfortunate circumstance with us for us to be able to continue the dialogue. At this time, we're going to take our caller from the 706 area code and bring that person on the line. Hello, good evening. You've reached Free Life Radio.
Good evening. My name is Brett Mitchell. First, let me say good evening to Bree, Mike, General, Alex. You know, what a great topic. I'm calling in today because I have a couple of things to say in regards to child custody as well as to the child support in regards to men. For instance, I'm a single father. I was divorced in 2001, had full custody of my daughters, and I have two daughters. Today there, one is 20 and one is 18, but I'm going to go back to 2001. They haven't seen their mother since 2003. And recently, my youngest daughter was acting up. I live in Georgia now, but I'm from New York. And what happened was my youngest daughter was about 13, 14 at the time, being promiscuous and acting up like teenagers do. And being a single father, I checked her basically in the sense of the things that she was doing. I'm also retired, and I was I'm a retired cop from New York as well. And so a lot of things that she was doing, I wouldn't co-sign, I wouldn't accept. And I'm on the job 24/7.
And what is so? What is your question? Because I'm gonna need you.
I'm rattling. Let me apologize.
That's okay.
But it is basically this. I'm talking about what I consider to be discrimination against men when it comes down to custody and child support. As you know, in the way that we're treated, I find that there is a big difference in how a mother is treated by the legal system and the court system in regards to her father, your rights. Even though we're supposed to share the same rights, when it comes in front of a judge or when it comes down to these agencies that are supposed to protect children, like child welfare, I find that there is a big, it's not fair or equal in how they administrate what they're supposed to do in preserving our rights. I still have a problem with my daughter. She ran away from home. And the thing is, my ex-wife owes me $30,000 in child support. So she's moving from state to state. So I'm unable to locate her because she doesn't want me to serve her. And I'm not getting the support from the legal system that I believe if I was a woman, I would be getting as a single mother. I'm not getting
it. They will find you.
Exactly.
Okay, so, Brett, what's your question?
And like you said, what's my question?
Yeah.
My question is this, is basically how do I go around this? I mean, in making them do what is right, especially, let's say, like with child welfare. There was allegations made that I abused her, which was dismissed, you know, but what had happened was I voluntarily let my daughter stay with my mother, who's like 5 minutes from me. But child welfare got involved and told my mother that my daughter wasn't allowed. I mean, that I told my daughter that she couldn't have a cell phone. I took her cell phone, her computer and stuff. And they told me that if I didn't give it back to her, you know, that they was going to remove her from my mother's house as well because it was her right to have those things. And
okay.
Yeah,
so,
and this is my thing, and I'm talking about the abuse under, like, what you would consider to be the color of the law, which is misconduct from these agencies, you know, who have the right, you know, to violate your civil rights, you know. This is one of those.
Okay, so I think so. The question that Brett is asking overall, and I'm going to pose this question to Mike, is what could he do to get around what is happening to him? Or who could he reach out to kind of help solve this problem for him? Who does he turn to?
Well, Brett, first of all, I want to say, you know, thank you, sir, for your service as an officer and also the devotion that you show to your children and raising your children for these last number of years. I think that is an example of what a dad does for his kids. He's there for them. One of the things I would say is that we just recommend that people, when Child Protective Services comes by, you know, they tend to want to make you think that they have the authority just to remove your kids, and if you don't go along immediately with them, that things will go very, very badly for you, you know, and that your children will be taken and there's nothing that you can do about it. The first thing that oftentimes we recommend that people do is don't even open the door, or certainly don't let them inside the house. And, you know, if they come by, have the child next to you, And this is for younger children. Your daughters are older at this point, but so that they can definitely see that, well, these children, they aren't being abused. There's no harm, but you don't ever want to let Child Protective Services examine your children. And in fact, what you know as a police officer, and what Child Protective Services are doing now is that they actually think that they have broader authority to question children than the police do. The police cannot actually question children related to anything without the parents' consent or the parents' knowledge that the questioning is going on. But Child Protective Services, what we're seeing is Child Protective Services are going to schools and taking children out of classrooms and then questioning them without ever having the parents' knowledge and consent of the questioning. We suggest that parents challenge that immediately and tell the Child Protective Service workers, no, I am not going to voluntarily consent to you questioning my child. You go to the court, you see if you can get an order for probable cause that would give you the capacity to state why you think that you ought to have access to my child. This is the problem, that a father like Brett is up against the unlimited power of government to intrude into his life, and the government has the resources to do that, but there are no resources available to the private citizen other than what they can muster of their own resources to essentially push back against these folks. You know, there's no public agency that you can go to, just like in the case of judicial corruption. There's no public agency that you can turn to say, hey, Child Protective Services is overreaching and overstepping. And Child Protective Services knows that, so they overreach and they overstep all the time. All the time. Who is Child Protective Services to get in the middle of this father's relationship with his children when he is the one who is actually ultimately responsible for how they are raised and what takes place? Yet when you send your children to school, what they're being taught in school these days is that if something happens to you that you don't like in your home, come and tell your teacher so that we can actually get the school counselor and social services involved to make sure that you're okay. And I will never forget.
Call 911.
Well, I will never forget. I'll tell you, I went to a parent-teacher conference one time where the teacher said, we're going to have so-and-so here as an advocate for your child. And I said, are you kidding me? I said, we're the parents. We advocate for our child. I don't want anybody to, you know, my child doesn't need an advocate independent of the parents. Nobody ever is going to care more about my kids than I do. We'll just stop now if you think that that's going to happen, because that's just not going to happen. And yet this is what's happening in our public education environment today, that everybody else thinks they can do a better job of raising your child than you can. And that is nonsense.
I know, and we have to, and like you said, Michael, we have to stand up and challenge the system, because until we do, we will constantly have this interruption in our relationships with our children.
Well, let me just give you the example of this. In the
1970s, if you could just do that in 30 seconds. And then we're going to take our caller from 903, because this person's been very eager to get on the line to talk.
30 seconds. Let me show you how the government has destroyed the fabric of the African-American community, the low-income community, African-American community. What they did in the 1970s was the government said, okay, if people are going to receive welfare benefits, we're going to implement a rule called the Man Out of the House Rule. The Man Out of the House Rule said that if you take government benefits, there can't be a male over the age of 18 in the home. That meant the father had to be out of the home if the mother was going to receive benefits to care for the children. That one single action destroyed family life in the African-American community, in the low-income African-American community. In this country, where at one point in the low-income African-American community, less than 50 years ago, over 82% of children were being raised in an attached two-parent home by their own biological parents. That one rule, 50 years later, has resulted in an African-American, inner-city African-American community where less than 18% of children are being raised in an intact two-parent home. It was the system itself that created fatherless African American community in the United States, and they just they have destroyed the black community in America, the family community, and that is the problem with government policy and other people saying we know better how to raise your children than you do. I think that was about 30 seconds.
Okay. Yes. Perfect. And that is a perfect segue to our call at 903. So we'll bring that person on. Hello. Good evening. Yes.
Well, they got a bad connection.
You have a bad connection. Hang up and call back, but I will acknowledge you when you call back.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello, 903?
Okay,
yeah, that person had a really bad connection. We're going to go to our next caller. That person is calling in from 347. Again, that number is, well, no, I don't think that, I think it's 718. I'm sorry, 718, we're going to pick you up now. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How you doing? It's a great show tonight. Talking about a lot of beautiful subjects here. I mean, you know, getting a lot of good information. I think this probably needs to be more than just a two-part series. We probably need to branch off because a lot of calls are coming in tonight.
Yes, they are. That's why I'm trying to move things along. And we probably will have a multiple-part series, but do you have a question or is there a concern that you want to just share with our audience? And
well, no,
I
came in on the tail end, and I heard some of the great subjects that the gentleman who was writing policy and the other brother who was talking about Socrates, and it touches on a lot of subjects out here, but I've known a lot of gentlemen that I've worked with that have had issues with the false charges filed through the courts that tied into, you know, custody issues and the part the government played when they stepped in and set up visitation rights according to their needs, and it didn't seem like it accommodated the family as far as the part, you know, the father or the mother being able to interact with the child. So, you know, for the courts to start raising families and dictating, you know, what social time you have with your child is really unfair. They really need to reexamine that. And it seems like the times that they drive you back and forth to court is starting to look like it's a moneymaker for the court system. It doesn't take 2 and 3 years to set up custody, visitation, and all this stuff. The child is not property. It's not chattel that you know, they need to be dictating this visitation. I would say once every other weekend, twice a month, able to, you know, is that a fair visitation for mother or father to see their child when you've raised this child and been there every day for the child? I don't think it's fair.
Well, here's what I say to that, and I'm not going to throw this to either panelist right now because we have a lot of calls, but I'm going to reply to that. I think that if a child if one parent has physical custody of a child, and then there's a non-custodial parent that clearly in open court says that he or she wants to spend as much time with their child as possible, that parent should be given shared, that those both parents should be given shared custody. Or it should be a sliding scale with how many weekends per month the non-custodial parent gets. Also, that parent should lobby to get as many holidays or whatever is possible, because if the parent that has the physical custody is with the child 5 days a week, then the non-custodial parent deserves to have the right to spend as much time as possible for them, because who knows, this non-custodial parent may have to work on the weekends. It should be made flexible so that each parent is getting as much quantitative as well as quality time with the child. So I want to thank you for calling.
Hey, Bree, if I could just piggyback on that real quick. You know,
I'm
what
sorry?
The courts would do, if I can piggyback on that real quick, and it'd be real short, what the courts would do when you say maximum time for the non-custodial parent, what they do is revert to what's called the standard visitation schedule. You know, if the two parents had come to an agreement on the custody and visitation, the courts will make a standard agreement, and that's every other weekend, and that's what they consider maximum time. And the reason they do that is if you give a non-custodial parent more time than that, it cuts into the child support, so they don't want to do that.
Well, then it's up to the non-custodial parent, like Michael said, to lobby and to try to get much reform in that particular custody case as possible.
Because well, that's why I said earlier that the parents need to come together
don't
before
get fed.
You go into court.
A closed mouth does not get fed. So if you don't go in there opening your mouth and fighting as hard as you possibly can, I mean, there's nothing wrong with fighting. You know, this is for your child. So you want to spend more than every other weekend with your child, maybe you should try to fight as hard as you can to do
but,
so.
But the point I was making is that, like I said earlier, the parents need to come together and have an agreement before they go to court, because if they don't have an agreement that they made out already, this is what the court will give them, and that's what's standard. And then you can fight all you want to. That's all the court is going to give you is every other weekend.
Well, no, not in that. Well, if that must be an Illinois thing, because here
well,
in New York.
You ask Mike about it. Ask Mike.
If you, I have to disagree, because I'm telling
if you don't have an agreement with the other parent,
you have to fight. You have to say this is not satisfactory. I want more time, and give every reason why you should have it. And it's not just because of the statute. You also have to look in the eyes of that judge. But sometimes you got to push your lawyer to the side and say, no, I don't want you to speak for me right now. I'm going to speak for myself. This is my child. I want to spend some time with he or she or them. I need more than every other weekend.
I'll put it to you like this. I've fought and I've been fighting for the last 9 years, and I don't think nobody's fought harder than me, okay? And that's what they gave me and told me I need to be grateful.
Right, but that's not every case, and that's not every state. And we're going to give Michael an opportunity towards the end. Well, we're 9 minutes away from the end of the show. I want to try to take one more caller before we close out the show. And that caller again is calling from 903. Hopefully, they have a better connection.
Hello, Bree. Can you hear me?
Good evening. Yes.
All right, this is Michael Talbert calling from East Texas, the epicenter of dysfunctional family law. I know Michael McCormick. I've worked with him for the past few years, and I've been on conference calls with General Parker, so I'm familiar with those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
My ultimate question is, what will it take to overcome the objections from lawyers, family law, sections of the bar, all those people that keep saying that a presumption of equality is not the right way to go? The parents who can agree, a lot of times they do go for something that resembles equal time because they know that their children want to spend equal time. But these lawyers who benefit from the broken system are the ones who fight the most against it. What will it take to overcome that?
Okay. I'm going to direct that question to General Parker. I'm going to start with him since I know that our exchange here was a little heated. Maybe he could infuse some light to your question, caller. So, General?
Mike, I think it's going to take a revolution. Okay. I'm serious about that. I wish parents would go in there with an agreement ahead of time, but absent of that, you know, these courts are set up to where they protect their profession and they want to make sure they keep their jobs, and they can't do it as long as parents are agreeing and don't have a reason to come to court, you know. So, you know, and I like to deal with, like Mike was talking about, you know, they set the system up to try to deal with 10 or 15% of the problems that's going on when you got 85% of the rest of the country who don't even deal with that, and we're worried about the 15%. and we shouldn't be doing that. We should be worried about the 80-85%, the majority. I mean, that's a democracy, right? We need to worry about the majority and what's happening with the majority and keep majority of the families together instead of worrying about the 10-15% who don't want to cooperate.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Michael, and I'm going to ask if we could wrap that up in like 2 minutes, because I want to see if we could squeeze one more call in and then end the show.
Okay. Well, what is it going to take to be able to get this presumption of equality into place? The courts do a great job of convincing people, and many people who pass through the courts go, I cannot believe what happened. This must have only happened to me. And what people need to realize is that what they say only happened to them happens mm-hmm. to everybody. Over 4,000 children lost a parent today in the family courts of America. 20,000 kids a week lose a parent in the family courts of America. And what people need to do, I think the great abolitionist Frederick Douglass said it the best. He said, power concedes nothing without a demand. These are your children. If you do not demand that your government take its hands off of your children, and forcefully demand that, then we have no reason to complain about what's going on. And this is an issue where black, white, brown, yellow, red need to stand shoulder to shoulder to shoulder. This is not an issue with respect to whether you're a Republican or whether you're a Democrat or whether you're anything on the spectrum in between. This rises completely above the politics, and what we have is that our families are being exploited by systems that are profiting from the breakdown and the extraction of the wealth of America's families. And if we do not stand up against them, I would just tell you that within two generations you will not recognize America for what it once was.
Okay. Well, caller, I want to thank you for calling in. And I've shared my information with your website, and I want for us to stay in contact, because I think this is definitely a conversation that needs to continue. We need to have a part two to this, and I will schedule that sometime in the future and let all parties know. I want to try to just take one more caller, and then we're going to end the show in about 3 minutes. Caller from 217. Good evening. Good evening. Okay. That caller's just listening. All right. Well, I want to go around the table real briefly. If just everyone, if they could take about 30, 45 seconds to wrap up how they, you know, what they felt about the show and what they feel that we need to do moving forward to work together, like Michael says, to work together regardless of our how we look at politics, how we look at our culture and our ethnic backgrounds, to stand side by side and to do things to change the policies in the family court system, because you can look on television every day and see how society is just running amok, and you have to wonder what each one of those people who went into a school or went into a post office or someplace and killed everybody, you have to wonder what type of kid this was before they turned into a murderer. So let's talk about that briefly. General, in 30 seconds, if you could wrap up your feelings about everything that we discussed tonight. Hello?
Yeah, I think it was a good discussion, and I think it brought out a lot of the passions and some of the feelings that people have been going through, you know, because mm-hmm. you go through the whole spectrum of the hurt, the pain, the frustration, and even sometimes you feel ostracized, even by family members and friends, even going through something like this. And people get the feeling, like Michael said, like they're the only ones going through this, and people kind of shy away and get off to themselves. And I think that's the worst thing that you can do, you know, because it's like out there in the wild. You know, the lions look for the one that gets away from the herd and they eat them up. So when you're out there on your own, you're going to get eaten alive. So find an organization, call in the Illinois Fathers, call in the ACFC, American Coalition of Fathers and Children, call you, you know. Talk to somebody, get into a support group, and get together, and by all means, write to Congress people, you know, your state legislators, okay, your U.S. representatives, and tell them that this kind of change.
Okay. Michael.
Well, first thing I want to say, Bree, is thank you for taking on this topic. This is obviously very emotional for a lot of people. And then I want to echo what General had to say as well, is that we see that we can make changes, and it is going to take the constant effort of a number of people who will not let up in order for us to revamp this system. But I will tell you that as far as the family law system goes, the emperor has no clothes, and people recognize that. They recognize that it's a sham, that it's a fraud, that it's feeding off of families, and they are demanding change. And it's incumbent upon all of us to make this our social cause and become engaged, because that is the only way that this system will change. And we can, you know, we know what has to be done in order to bring change about. We're seeing changes. You know, I've been doing this kind of work now for better than 15 years, and what I'm seeing is the pace of change is accelerating, but we can't afford any longer to continue this system the way it is. And and we know what we need to do to revamp it. And it does, in many instances, it's going to have to be reconfigured in a much different way than what it looks like today if our society is going to survive. So I just encourage people to know that this is an area where you can get involved, you can make a difference, and then you can see the results of your efforts, just as General was talking about in Illinois, what we're seeing in South Carolina, in Arizona, in states all over the country. But what will change this is when our legislators hear from the citizens that they want this to be different.
Okay. Alex?
Well, I just want to close and say that there's an old saying that there's safety in numbers, and we're going to have to get together. This is going to have to be a unified effort for all of us who feel that we've been unjust in this system, and get together and do it collectively. And I look forward to the next show. Absolutely, because there's a lot more that we need to come together and talk about.
Okay. And just to piggyback off of that, the Bree Life Radio Show will be doing a part three to this series. It's these important topics that I personally feel very passionate about, having been subject to it, and also have friends and family and colleagues that have been subject to court cases of revolving around family court and child support issues. No one wins in these situations, and who loses the most are the children. So if there's anything that, like Michael said, that one could think about making their personal agenda to help eradicate or reform, should be this, especially if they've been subject to it. So in closing, I want to thank Michael McCormick from the executive. He's the executive director of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children. General Parker, he is the executive director of Illinois Fathers. And my good friend Alex Lee, that was so kind to co-host with me this evening. And I'm your girl, Bree. Thank you very much, and stay tuned for part two of child custody and child support issues, whether it's friend or foe. Good night, all.
Yeah, yeah, A-Dream in the building, shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
We finna go in, look,
yes, sir.
Look, we came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time to sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See, Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico. So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down the to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life,
what you live in life.